Growth Tactics podcast. Today, we are going through another chat, whatever. It is going to be about multiple different questions, probably really important questions to most of us, also including me, by the way. So it was also interesting to see that, well, I would say a lot of questions that a lot of people are having are questions that a lot of people are having, including me and myself. So let's actually get right into it. Why is there some image issue? I do not understand that. Where was I? I was there. Well. I'm gonna show you. Here we are. Yes, that's fine. And as you maybe can already see in the background, the question was, can you give me an answer to all of the questions using different schools of philosophy? And what was the question? The question was, what are some questions people are having around life? And then he spit out multiple different questions that, well, as I mentioned before, apparently a lot of people are having, and also including myself. So it is really interesting to see that, you know, most people are probably having the same issues and or problems and are facing the same questions and the same wondering about the same things, I'd say. Let's see. So here are some possible answers to the questions you listed, drawing on different schools of philosophy. The first one, what is the meaning of life? From existentialism, the meaning of life is not given to us. Rather, we must create it for ourselves through our choices and actions. From Buddhism, the meaning of life is to reduce suffering and cultivate inner peace and happiness through mindfulness and compassionate action. From Stoicism, the meaning of life is to live in accordance with nature and develop virtues such as wisdom, courage, and self-discipline. So I think in the end, what we are seeing there is that most often we are creating the meaning for ourselves, you know, whether it is by whether it is by training mindfulness, what it is by living in accordance with nature, which is also like a task or, you know, something that you have to develop, I'd say. And is never apparently given to us and never something that we're already having, you know, whether it is by, I mean, we're also creating it with those interests that we're having, with those, you know, thoughts that we can create, that we can have, and so on and so forth. How can I find purpose and fulfillment in my life? From positive psychology, finding purpose and fulfillment in life requires identifying and using one's personal strengths and values to contribute to something greater than oneself. Probably something that you've heard before. From Taoism, finding purpose and fulfillment requires letting go of attachments to outcomes and embracing the natural flow of life. Which kind of reminds me a bit of Amor Fati, love, faith, and I mean Stoicism in general to some degree. Like whatever happens, happens, and whatever happens, love what happens. Like Amor Fati, love, faith, love your faith, but also not focusing on those things that you cannot control and not getting therefore also upset about those things you cannot control, but thinking and realizing that there are still a lot of things that you can control and are in your hands, your reaction, your thoughts, and your actions. And these really do determine the quality of your life, probably also the quality of your thinking, which then also ties into the quality of your life, I would say. Period. From Aristotle's philosophy of eudaimonia, finding purpose and fulfillment requires living a virtuous life and cultivating meaningful relationships. I think a lot of those answers to how can I have purpose and fulfillment in my life include include a way of living, and I think this way of living is always giving you something to do. It's always giving you something to think about. It's always giving you some, maybe even some sort of constraint or restraint. It's restraining yourself. I mean, when I'm thinking about like, okay, natural flow. So I don't know, whatever. I've been just, you know, doing some rendering stuff before, and you know, sometimes it is moving rather well, sometimes it is moving rather shitty, and you know, one can get upset about that. But you know, I could also think, well, this is the flow of life, this is the flow of today, so whatever is happening today, it's just happening. Of course I can do this, that, and the other thing, but you know, some things are just outside of my control, some things I can't change, period. And that is it. Like, just letting things flow and, you know, trying to accept that and trying to maybe also seeing that as something good and something great. How can I improve my relationship with others? From Confucianism, improving relationships with others requires cultivating virtues such as compassion, respect, and honesty, and fulfilling one's social roles and responsibilities. From mindfulness practices, improving relationships with others requires developing self-awareness and compassion and communicating with authenticity and kindness, which I think is incredibly important, because I don't know. I mean, I think that don't we all, I don't want to say dislike, but I am going to say dislike for the sake of, you know, not being able to find a better word. You know, inauthenticity, I think, is something we all can notice and we all can see and we all do not necessarily like. So people that really feel like, okay, they know who they are, they know what their, you know, what their place in life is, what their place in society is maybe as well. I think this is attractive, not only in you know, in the partnership sense, but also I think in a friendship sense. I don't know, it kind of feels like this to me. Can't actually pinpoint why it's the case, but yeah. From Stoicism, improving relationships with others requires accepting what is outside of our control, focusing on our own actions and reactions, and treating others with kindness and respect. Kindness and respect is always a good way to go with, because I think, and it is interesting to look for kindness and respect in other people, especially respect. In the German language, you're having two ways of, well, let's say greeting somebody. There is a more respectful way, and there is a more, and or talking to somebody. And it is always quite interesting to see who is using like the formal way and who is not using the formal way, which, you know, it depends on the situation and it depends on the context. But in companies, for example, this could build a more familiar relationship with coworkers, I guess, and or a more familiar relationship in the company in general. Like, we are respecting each other, but we are still like friends, and it does create a different feeling, a different vibe in the company, I'd say. At least in my point of view. And on the other hand, sometimes it is also good to be more formal with other people. Like, I mean, I think in English it might be saying sir to somebody and not just, you know, being like, hey, you, whatever. Because it might lead to, and I think it is about not expecting that, but just, you know, merely hoping for it, that this other person is also reacting with respect towards you. But as I said, you can never be sure of that and you cannot control that. So very often I think it is the case to give first, to expect something or to get something back, maybe to a certain chance. Then of course you are, the chances are higher when you yourself are sending out respect and or kindness and or love to get that back. And, you know, I mean, if you're thinking through it, just makes sense. Like, also calculating it, basically. I mean, if I'm giving something, the chances are there. If I'm not giving something, well, is it still then a 50-50 chance? I don't think so. It wouldn't make sense. Anyway. How can I balance work and leisure time? From Epicureanism, balancing work and leisure time requires prioritizing pleasure and tranquility and avoiding excess and unnecessary obligations. This now makes. This is interesting to see. Well, just, you know, for me personally, anyway. From Taoism, balancing work and leisure time requires embracing the natural flow of life and finding harmony between action and stillness. From positive psychology, balancing work and leisure time requires identifying and pursuing activities that bring both pleasure and meaning and creating healthy boundaries around work and leisure time. Yes, I think it is indeed about balance. I think Taoism is really right there. I'm not quite sure about the whole pleasure thing. I think, I mean, it heavily depends on, I guess, when you've been born and like the. I don't know if I can talk about culture there. And well, what is interesting is consumerism, consuming a lot, buying a lot, whatever. Also, I think smoking and whatever, which is maybe part of consuming something or consumerism, was really a lot higher in previous generations, I think, than it is now. You know, at least, you know, maybe this is just me, but apparently it is the case, I guess, that, you know, certain generations are not so much into, you know, buying this new thing and having this new clothing shit and whatever, going with trends maybe and so on and so forth. And this whether I am prioritizing pleasure and or free time, leisure time, compared to doing the opposite or having a balance, I think also depends on your upbringing and the generation, whatever. Might be interesting to study and or look for. What is the best way to deal with stress and anxiety? From mindfulness practices, dealing with stress and anxiety requires developing mindfulness practices such as meditation, breathing exercises, and body awareness. From Stoicism, dealing with stress and anxiety requires accepting what is outside of our control, focusing on what is within our control, and developing virtues such as courage, wisdom, and self-discipline. From CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, dealing with stress and anxiety it requires identifying and challenging negative thought patterns and developing coping strategies such as problem solving and relaxation techniques. How can I overcome my fears and limitations? There are eight, by the way. This is the sixth one. From existentialism, overcoming fears and limitations requires taking responsibility for one's own actions. Choices and actions, by the way, and embracing the freedom and possibility of the human condition, which really sounds empowering, by the way. From CBT, overcoming fears and limitations requires identifying and challenging negative beliefs and assumptions and developing new ways of thinking and behaving. I guess a good exercise is always looking for those negative thoughts that one is having and writing them down. And why writing them down? Because you clearly then can see what you have thought just before, and then you can challenge that. And most often it's going to be like, well, this is not really the case. You know, I am not really whatever dumb or such a bad person or whatever. From positive psychology, overcoming fears and limitations requires identifying and using personal strengths to pursue goals and overcome obstacles. What can I do to make a positive impact on the world? From utilitarianism, making a positive impact on the world requires pursuing actions that create the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Very interesting. I've had one subject in university this semester, which was quite to some degree about that. And it is really interesting to see also in an architectural sense what people did to do that, you know, having the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And yeah, also like society-wise, having prisons. Are we having prisons? Are we punishing people? Aren't we punishing people? I mean, there are a lot of factors to this question. There is a lot of thickness to this whole subject. Well, it was rather interesting. From Virtue Ethics, making a positive impact on the world requires cultivating virtues such as compassion, kindness, and justice, using these virtues to guide one's actions. From Existentialism, making a positive impact on the world requires taking responsibility for one's own choices and actions and creating meaning and purpose through these actions. How can I achieve my goals and dreams? I think this was a good one. From Positive Psychology, achieving goals and dreams requires setting specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. I think there should be goals, and maybe he would... Yeah, there are 10 questions. Which I might go through the next time, but what I want to say is, this is a really, really good way, I think, of trying to achieve goals, because not only is it saying that it should be a specific goal, it should be measurable, which sometimes is a bit difficult, but I think it's also good. It should be achievable, which I think does create a framework in which it's not going to be so goddamn hard. That, of course, you have to work for it, and you probably will have to work hard for it, but it is still achievable. I think this makes sense. I think just, you know, having goals and maybe even breaking this big goal down into smaller pieces that are consisting of those, or that implement those few factors to, you know, then get to this really big goal. Would I think make sense, you know, this achievability is a great component. Relevant, also really nice. Should I really do that? Does this make sense for me? Is this relevant for me? Sometimes it's also relevant for some other people, which is, I think, also fine. And also time bound. I have to get there from this day to whatever year. I think this is difficult to, probably the most difficult thing to do. And I think this heavily ties into achievability. Am I able to train for a marathon in like a week? I don't really know. I don't really know if it is smart when I'm having this marathon then after this week, because I'm probably going to be quite dead. But yeah, with that being said, I'm going to end the episode there. I wish you the best and hopefully see you soon. So.